Hello, everyone, and welcome to So What Happens Next, Small Screens. I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this week, we are continuing along our cinematic Star Wars marathon with the one, the only, the film that started it all, Star Wars, A New Hope, from 1977. It is a period of civil war. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. During the battle, Rebel spies manage to steal secret plans to the Empire's ultimate weapon, the Death Star, an armored space station with enough power to destroy an entire planet. Pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Princess Leia races home aboard her starship, custodian of the stolen plans that can save her people and restore freedom to the galaxy. All right, Amber, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing not too bad. So we are officially, with this episode, over the halfway point of the Star Wars series as it stands in 2022.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God! This was originally the first film in the franchise, then it was the fourth film in the franchise. Now it's like the technical sixth film in the franchise if you follow the whole canon deal. Straight out the gate, Amber, what are your opening thoughts on Star Wars from 1977, A New Hope?
A New Hope. So it starts right after Rogue One, yep. Which is pretty cool. And I think this one is definitely the one that I've watched the most out of the old trilogy.
Okay.
Yeah. All the other ones, I'm kind of just like, especially, yeah, like the other two, I just don't remember much of it. Mm-hmm. Besides like the endings. But this one, I'm like, I feel like I've watched it so many times. It's like ingrained in my brain.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably one I've seen the most. Maybe I might have seen Empire more. I remember as a kid sometimes skipping this one because I always thought it was kind of a little kind of boring, but I was like, yeah, it's okay. But yeah, I mean, this is a classic. This is the film that made George Lucas. I mean, so it kicked everything that we have today off. So it's hard to dislike it for me, but we'll do our best to rate it fairly among the other ones. But yeah, so kicking off this movie, as Amber said, there's kind of four chunks to this movie, I think. There's the opening sequence on the Tantive IV, the kind of all the shit that happens on Tatooine, when they're hanging out on the Death Star, and then when they go to blow up the Death Star. So those are like the four big pieces. So this opening, as Amber pointed out, is coming straight, like almost immediately after the events of Rogue One, canonically speaking. First characters we get introduced to are droids, though, which I always thought was a kind of interesting take, right? Like, there's no people in the beginning of this movie that are like of importance. We're introduced to C-3PO and R2-D2, first people we get to see.
Yeah.
This opening, especially in the context of Rogue One, Amber, what are your thoughts on this opening sequence?
Yeah, I think it's a really cool intro into like the Star Wars franchise, especially thinking about it from the other side, where, you know, people during that time, that was their first introduction to Star Wars. Right. Whereas like when I grew up, it was the prequels. Like that was the first thing that I watched before watching the original Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I already knew, like, it's really hard because I already know all of these characters.
Well, sure,
and who they are, especially R2-D2 and C-3PO. But I think it is like kind of like a good introduction, I guess, to, because they are an important part of the film, those two droids. I mean,
they kind of instigate the whole thing. Yeah,
they instigate the whole thing, and then they're there till the very end, as we will, you know, talk about later with the newer series that came out.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They're more or less there till the end of the franchise, at least as it stands today in 2022.
Yeah, and I can't imagine how much data they're holding.
Well, C-3PO, by this point, has had his mind wiped at least once.
Okay, that's true.
Because the end of 3,
but
they're like,
R2-D2?
R2-D2,
like,
yeah.
He's a historical.
Well, and that's been like the whole, one of the things I think George Lucas had said in the past is like his vision for this was this is a story being told by R2-D2 like hundreds or thousands of years in the future to someone else. So I think that kind of breaks down. Like we've been watching these a little further out than you're hearing. So we've watched them before, but like we recently were in the midst of watching The Rise of Skywalker, and I realized during that like R2-D2 is just like not in that movie for a huge chunk of it.
Yeah.
No clue why, but they just don't have him there. So I think that kind of breaks Lucas's whole, you know.
How did you know about the parts you weren't there for?
Yeah, unless it was like told to you by someone, maybe. So
yeah,
that works too.
And I guess he does like have C-3PO's memory back up or whatever. Bullshit. We'll get to it. But yeah, so we're on the Tantive IV. This is where you introduced to Princess Leia. And what do you think of Leia's intro here? Because I think like as a kid, you know, you just see her as like the princess who needs saving. But I feel like watching this as an adult, it's a little different because the first thing she does is she finishes recording her message.
Yeah.
And the stormtroopers come in. And I feel like even for 1977, we're kind of like breaking the archetype here because the first thing she does is shoot a guy. Like, she kills a man.
Yeah.
They go, hey, stop her. And she turns, like, bam, shoots one. And then they stun her. What do you think of that whole, like, coming into this movie?
I love the music.
Oh, yeah.
For each person.
Oh, her theme is...
So when we have her theme, you know it's Leia's theme. Mm-hmm. And then when we later meet Luke Skywalker, he has his own theme, too.
Oh, with the twin songs.
Yeah. Wow. So great. But yeah, just having that music like playing in the background, you kind of know, okay, like she's an important character, but she's also, like you said, a princess. Mm-hmm. But I think Carrie Fisher was like the perfect person for this role.
Yeah.
Because she brings kind of like an edge to this character. So not like, oh, seeing Cinderella or something like that, or like it's like, you know, damsel in distress and like can't do anything. It's like, no, she is like basically running the show,
right?
And she is almost kind of like fearless, like in the face of like, you know, possibly death
tortured. And when you learn like exactly like what R2's holding, which is the Death Star plans, like it kind of amplifies the whole like she's taking the risk, right? She's like, okay, I gotta get these things out. Yeah. She's doing the job. And I think it also at the same time not just amplifies the risk, but amplifies, like, the Empire as a threat. Because, like, she's willing to shoot these people without even thinking. And then it's also, like, these people have to kind of go. Like, two or three guys have to go get her, right?
Yeah.
And then later they do the whole torture thing and all that stuff. We'll get to it. But, like, yeah, I think you have a great point. Like, she brings an edge to the character that's not... Like, in today's movies, I think of characters, like, especially, I feel like this is done a lot with female characters, where it's like, they don't really have an emotional depth, they're just badass because let's make the lady badass, where there's no, like, well, why are they that way, you know, what are their actual wants, other than, I want to look like a badass.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, like, this kind of drive, whereas I think with her, and I think the music does a lot of that, too, because the music is very light and soft. But then at the same time, it kind of switches to, like, she shoots, and then it gets all back into the... Dun, 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 yeah. And then they, you know, stun her and walk away. And I think that she does a great job playing both those sides. I think, like, an example of that done wrong, weirdly enough, is Spaceballs. Like, I know it's a parody, but I feel like the woman who plays the Princess Leia character... Yeah. I can't remember the name. The woman who plays the Princess Leia character, like, she... does all of that to where it's annoying, right? Like, it's annoying that she has to be so independent and all that. Whereas in this, it's like, the only time it's ever played as, like, maybe an annoyance is when it's just, like, her and Han going at it. And, like, as an audience member, you're not annoyed because that's just the fun dynamic of the characters. Whereas in something like Spaceballs, it's just like, oh, God, get over it. Jesus, it's, like, annoying. Because it's just like, why are you being an asshole?
Yeah.
Let Lone Star do the thing or whatever, you know? We're not here to talk about Spaceballs. We're here to talk about what Spaceballs is based on, Star Wars. So yeah, R2-D2 and C-3PO get away.
And I love the dynamic between these two characters.
Yes.
I know some people have said, like, are they a couple? Which I'm like, no.
Is that a thing? Do people go like, oh, C-3PO and R2-D2 be fucking?
Well, not that, like, to that extent. But like, oh, they're like a gay couple, like Ernie and Bernie or something like that. But
you mean Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street?
Oopsie. I like fucked that
up. Oh, I'm sorry that we don't watch, we don't religiously watch Sesame Street in our late 20s.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I think there has been stuff floating around where it's just like, oh, like that's just kind of their dynamic. And I'm like, yeah, but they're also robots. But I feel like they definitely have a lot of sass to them. Yeah. More so than like other like robotic characters, I guess we've seen.
Yeah. Well, they're like that weird line between like sassy but still subservient. Mm-hmm. You know, like they'll do obviously what they're told, but at the same time, especially R2-D2, where it's just like, you know, I think in episode eight, Luke's like, hey, watch it. We're in a sacred place, language or something like that. R2-D2. And I'm like, yeah, he's probably swearing up and down in this movie. And that's the joke. You know, like everyone always makes a joke. I think there's some shitty meme where it's like, oh, R2-D2 is constantly swearing because they beep every word he says. And I'm like, ha ha ha, it's so funny. But I really wouldn't doubt if you had like a, like maybe the script says it, I don't know. But it's just kind of like, there's probably some swears in there. It's like, yo, I'm going fucking this way. And C-3PO is like, well, I'm not going that way. It's like, yeah, well, fuck you. We'll see how long you survive. He's like, yeah, fuck you, bro. I don't give a shit. Fuck you. I'll see you later. And then, of course, he gets shot by the Jawas and all that stuff. This is also where we get introduced to Luke, you know. We kind of follow the droids for a good chunk of the beginning of this movie. And then, you know, they're taken by the Jawas, these scavengers, and then they're sold to none other than Uncle Owen, who's going to be in this Obi-Wan show coming out. And he was also in Star Wars 2 and 3. Well,
not the same person.
No, not the same person, but same character.
Yeah.
Finally, an origin of why he's an asshole. but yeah, so what do you think of our introduction to Luke? You know, this is that whole, we're buying the droids, and I was going to go to Tashi Station for some power, or for one of my friends for some power converters, or whatever the fuck he says. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I don't, how old is Luke?
Luke, I believe, is 19 years old.
Okay, yeah, he definitely acts like it. Because then he talks about, you know, going into the military, I guess they're,
the Empire.
Yeah,
he's trying
Empire.
To join the
Imperial
Army.
Which it's like,
maybe.
Good thing he didn't do that.
Right?
but he's wanting to be like a pilot, I think, or something like that. And
I think he just kind of wants to enlist. He almost strikes me like a, you know, there's always like those farmer kids, the stereotypical farmer kid that's like, I'm just going to go join the army. And mm-hmm. like, it almost comes off
like
that.
Yeah, because they have nothing else like going for
and
them.
They don't want to be on the farm anymore, so they want to leave. I mean, I don't know if that's actually a thing, but it's definitely a stereotype in movies. So if you're a farmer person and you're listening to our podcast, apologies if you took offense to that. Didn't mean it offensively. But yeah, he's just like looking for a way off Tatooine.
Yeah, which I don't blame him. They're like,
Tatooine sucks.
Yeah, it's nowhere.
We got like a whole show on Tatooine recently and it just sucked. Like,
yeah.
It just sucked. Like, I don't want to go there anymore.
But I think it's interesting how he, like many characters, is, you know, it's very akin to like Anakin, where it's like he wants something better for himself, better for his mother. And in this case for Luke, he wants something better for him, especially when he looks out into the sunset. Like, I feel like that scene is just, like, really, like, I don't know. It's just really, like, cool because
I think it's a beautiful scene.
Yeah, just, like, kind of not just looking at the sunset, but looking into, like, the future.
It's that longing for another horizon,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
He wants to leave. He wants to go beyond where he is.
And unfortunately, Uncle Owen is like, no, you can't do that or whatever. Or like,
first of all, these people get Luke when he is a newborn.
Yeah.
He is like less than can't be more than a couple days old.
Yeah.
If not a few hours, right?
Yeah.
These motherfuckers still make him call them Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Yeah.
They could have been like, we're your mom and dad. Just, you don't know. We're trying to hide you from the Empire. Just make him call them. No. They're like, we don't care about you enough. Like, you get to call us uncle, aunt and uncle, because God forbid we, like, cross that line. Like, who? What? What? Dude, Uncle Owen sucks.
You suck, you jackass.
And Aunt Beru is just being a pushover.
Yeah, and this is the part where I kind of glaze over it, because their conversation is just, yeah, like you describe them, they just don't really care about, like, what Luke wants. And Uncle Owen is just kind of like, oh, he's just another person to basically help me out, like, on the farm or whatever. And even how he, like, treats the droids, it's just kind of like,
he treats them like slaves.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that the droids are kind of, like, they are workers. That's, like, their point. But I mean, and maybe we'll talk about it when we talk about episode 9, because it comes up a lot there. It's like, yeah. At what level the droids have sentience is like very questionable to how they're treated in this series. And I mean, even in this one, they have to like fix them with what they call restraining bolts, which are basically like little shock collars. Yeah. That he affixes to R2 and 3PO. And of course, R2 tricks the idiot Luke into taking his off.
Yeah.
When he shows him the, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And R2 fucks off to the desert to go find Obi-Wan. But like, yeah, Uncle Owen, when they're going to buy the droids, first of all, he doesn't recognize 3PO. I think that's maybe the biggest crime that the prequels have done in that regard of continuity sake.
Yeah.
Is like, they introduce Uncle Owen, he meets R2-D2, he meets C-3PO, and he's just like, yeah, I'll get the, like, I could buy it. He buys the gold one because he knows. He sees R2-D2 and he's like, oh no, fuck that guy. I'm buying this new one. I'm buying this like new R5 unit. And then his head blows up and he's like, ah, fuck. And then 3PO about to just like be like, all right, R2, see you for never.
I know. Even though he is carrying the information.
I know. It's like, bro.
Fucking dumbass.
But then he takes a shot. He's like, oh, well, that guy, I've worked with him before. You should hire that guy. And I'm like, hire or purchase? Come on. 3PO. Let's be real, hon. But yeah, you know, R2 runs away after the whole, they give him like an oil bath, a little weird, but he's like, you know, he runs away. Luke is already really like super duper disenfranchised with farm life because he asks Uncle Owen to leave. I hate, man. Ugh, the teen angst in me just riles up watching that scene when they're sitting at lunch or dinner or whatever.
Yeah, and they're having that disgusting blue milk.
The blue milk and I guess just steamed lettuce. Cause
Boiled vegetables.
Well, because like, isn't there a scene like later when Luke goes off to find the droids? Like, Owen comes down and he's like, you seen Luke? And Bru's like, I haven't seen him since this morning. And she's just casually like throwing lettuce into this steaming pot. And I'm like, what the fuck are you making? Like a wet salad. Ew, yeah. It's fucking gross. But yeah, they eat like cereal or something. I don't know what the fuck it is. But and he's like, I'm not sick of putting my application in this year. And he's like, well, I need you on the farm. It's like, the farm. Yeah, where you're just farming moisture. You really need that much help to farm fucking water? Like, like, fuck you, Owen. Like, I really do hope the new show, the Obi-Wan show,
yeah,
gives a little bit of backing as to why he's kind of such, like, I'm serious, I kind of want to know, why is he such an asshole? Because like,
maybe like, there's, I don't know, from what I've seen from the trailers, there's seems to be a lot of conflict.
Yeah.
And it's not easy keeping the, you know, son of a freaking Sith Lord.
Right.
So,
well, that's what I want to see. I want to, yeah, see them Inquisitors, like, yeah. I could see, like, him, yeah,
being like, this is more than I wanted to take on.
Right. Like, I want him to be like, I want to see him get really afraid of what's out there.
Yeah.
Because in this, it's like, I get it, but they almost frame it like, he's got too much of his father in him, and he's like, that's what I'm afraid of. And I'm like, okay, like, I guess I get it, but like, I don't, like, I don't know. I think it also is a failing because it's like the prequels kind of change this section of the film enough to where it's like, it almost implies that like Owen and Anakin grew up together.
Yeah.
Right? Like, at the end of the day, it's kind of just like, he's like your half uncle. And I feel like when Lucas went to do 1, he didn't quite compliment 4 as well as he could have. Like, yeah, if you told me that like Owen and Anakin were friends as children, I could buy it. Why don't, yeah, you replace him with that? It's so wizard, Annie. Why can't he have been Uncle Owen?
This is so wizard, Annie.
That would have made total, yeah, fucking sense. Or maybe get one of the Gleep Glop kids out of there. Or that ugly little girl with the teeth. Like, get her out of there. Put Owen in. And, like, Stranger Things, Anakin's life. That's a show. What are you doing, Disney? Give me a little Anakin Disney Plus show.
Not very good with continuity unless it's Marvel.
True, but that's because they got a Feige at the helm, so...
That's true.
I don't need to do that Star Wars. But anyway, we move on, you know. Meet Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Tusken Raiders, all that stuff. Obi-Wan tells him about his dad. Which, in context of the Clone Wars show and the movies, like, it's a little deeper of a hit, because he's like, what happened to my dad? And he's just like...
Yeah, he so died. I left him for dead.
I mean, Darth Vader killed him.
Yeah.
He's like, genius, Obi. Like,
which again, I still don't understand why I lie about that, because he finds out anyways.
And he clearly doesn't know who Darth Vader is.
Yeah.
Because he says, a pupil of mine, Darth Vader. And Luke is like, whoa, what a weird name, but okay. And like goes on with it. So yeah, I don't get why not tell him the truth.
Yeah.
But then again, I guess it'd be kind of shook if you meet Darth Vader later, let alone see him kill Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Plus, it might make Luke kind of go looking for Vader. I think that's what they're really afraid of, is they don't want Luke to go find his dad.
Yeah.
Right? Especially naive,
I mean,
young Luke.
Especially since they've, you know, put in so much effort to keep the children, like, separated from him. Which, to me, also is kind of, like, I feel like a flaw with, like, both Obi-Wan and Yoda. It's just like, oh, we gotta, like, you know, separate the kids and then also separate them from their father, even though, like, I don't know. I feel like it could have helped Anakin, because then he could have been like, oh, those are, like, Padme and I's, like, children.
No, I think the issue isn't Vader, ultimately. Mm-hmm. It's that, I don't remember where I read this or heard this. Maybe it was in the movie or something. But it's that they didn't want Palpatine to find them.
Oh, that would make sense.
Because then either Palpatine will turn them and dump Vader, or he'll, he'll just replace Vader.
Yeah.
Or he'll have a little army of Sith Lords, like kind of what they do anyway with the Inquisitors.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, oh, well, I guess it's a little different because, like, the Skywalkers are clearly, like, super mega powerful. So they don't want Palpatine to have that. Which I guess they kind of fail ultimately with Kylo Ren turning. Boy, that movie just gets worse and worse.
I know.
But yeah, so, well, speaking of Vader, I mean, let's talk about Vader. Let's talk about the bad guys, because they get some screen time throughout all of this, because Leia is now prisoner on the Death Star. What do you think of some of these scenes on the Death Star? I guess the first one that comes to mind is when, like, Tarkin, it's like such a random drop, it's not a drop scene, but it's just like a scene that I feel like people don't pay enough attention to. That, like, boardroom scene when they come in and Tarkin is just like, the Republic Senate will not be an issue any longer. Like, there's no more Senate. Like, it's just not a fucking thing anymore. I'm like, that's a big bomb to drop. Like, in context of all of these movies, that's a huge bomb to drop. That just, like, the Republic Senate after 20 years is finally donezo. It's over. We don't have it anymore. Regional governors are there. Emperor has solidified power in the galaxy, pretty much. Everything is hunky-dory for us. And then, of course, you get that famous Vader, like, choke-out scene with that weird, freaky, you know, when he's like, this is the ultimate power in the universe.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And he's like, this does not compare to the Force. And he's like, oh, blah, 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 fuck your religion. And he's just like, but what do you think of a Tarkin and Vader's dynamic in this?
I think Tarkin is the one person, like, he doesn't really fuck with, which is, like, really interesting, because Tarkin is so stoic that, like, he, versus all of the bad guys we've been introduced to, who seem to have a fear of, like, Darth Vader and basically anybody that wields a Force, he, like, has no fear, which is, like, really, like, it just makes him, like, he's, like, he doesn't seem to, I don't know, like, how to, he just seems like,
I think it's like a respect almost.
Yeah.
They both, like, mutually respect each other enough to just take each other's lead. Like,
yeah.
When he's choking him and he's like, Vader, he's like, enough of this. Like, Vader, release him. And he's just like, fine, as you wish. And he, like, lets him go. I don't get the vibe that he's like, yes, sir. You know?
Yeah.
He's not like, yes, master. He's just like, fine, okay.
Yeah, because, like, Tarkin is not, like, a wannabe,
yeah,
you know, type of, like, captain or commander or whatever they are. He just, like, is. And I think with, like, a lot of characters, especially in, like, the later series where we're introduced to General Hux, like, he kind of ends up like a whiny bitch, like, towards the end.
Oh, totally. I mean, we'll talk about it
and
when
we never
get to
see
eight,
that with Tarkin.
No, I think the most you see Tarkin kind of get high on his laurels is when he's like, when they're like, sir, we have your ship ready. Do you want to get out just in case? And he's like, at our moment of triumph, like, fuck off. No, I'm going to stay here. It's like, haha, hubris, you're dead.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you. Like, in all, especially, like, if you compare him to somebody like Krennic from the previous film.
Oh, yeah.
Or yeah, like Hux. Like, at first in Seven, Hux and Ren have this kind of, like, tit-for-tat relationship. Like, it's almost like the opposite version of Tarkin and Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Where Tarkin and Vader aren't competing with one another. they're both just like, we have a mutual respect for one another. If I go up, he goes up, and this is great. Like, it works for both of us.
Yeah.
Right? Not that they wouldn't throw each other under the bus, but that they don't feel a need to. Whereas, yeah, with Hux and Ren, it's just this kind of like, I'm better than you. And then in Rogue One, when Krennic is just like, you can tell, I guess maybe it's a juxtaposed Tarkin, but he kind of tries to be like, oh, so we're cool then, Vader? And he's like choking him out right there. And it's just like, you know, you're not my buddy, Tarkin. Fuck off. But yeah, I like their dynamic. I like how, I gotta be honest, like, as an adult, I kind of like this talking scenes on the Death Star, because it kind of gives a little bit more to what's going on in the world, like how powerful the Empire is that they built this fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
You also get the scary torture ball that goes after Leia.
Oh, yeah.
That's freaky. Don't like that. Don't want to know what that white shit is in the tube. That looks like something you don't want injected into your blood. And then we're back to Tatooine. and we find, you know, Luke's not parents. Parents are dead. And they are, like, crispy. Like, they are...
They're fried.
They are deep fried. They are toasted. And Luke is kind of sad about it. He could be more sad. But he's pretty much just like... All right, Obi-Wan, I guess you're right. I'll go with you to Alderaan. Like, it's fine. Like, okay. And then, like, they go... They just go off to, what's it called? Mos Eisley, I think?
Yes.
The Wretched Hive of Scum and Villainy. To go where they go meet Chewbacca and Han Solo. And you get some, like, bitchin' samurai lightsaber action at the bar. Because that guy doesn't like Luke for no reason at all.
I don't like your face.
I don't like you either. Cuts like a dude's arm off, and everyone just like goes back to doing whatever the fuck they're doing. Yep. I love the music stops. He cuts the arm off, and then it's just like, like right after it, and they're just like, I'm Han Solo, Captain Millennium Falcon, and we get the famous Greedo scene. Well, Han agrees to take him to Alderaan for a fuck ton of money, and we get that famous Greedo scene. So, yeah. Like, what do you think of this? So, have you seen the original one? I don't know if you've seen, like, have you seen, like, the OG where Han shoots first kind of type thing?
Yeah, so I've seen that, but I still don't understand what the original one was, I guess.
Okay, so in the...
Because I see a lot of videos making fun of it, basically. Right.
So, in the original film, and we have the original film. We just didn't watch it for... So, just to context here, I think I said it, like, when we did episode one. But for these, we're watching what's available on, like, Disney Plus and stuff, just to keep in with what you guys can see, because I know not everybody has access to... They're notoriously kind of difficult to get the original cuts of these films. In the original cut, you know, when they're talking across the table?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't have the money with me, and it shows him, like, pulling his gun out of its holster under the table. What he does is he just shoots Greedo, because Greedo's like... Oh, I'll just kill you or something like that. And he's like, I bet you will. Bang, and shoots him. And like Greedo just is fried and he just drops dead. And then Han like puts his gun away, gets up, leaves, like casual. And I think like the way that was supposed to be shown is like Han isn't a good guy. Like it's supposed to show that Han is kind of in that gray area of like, I'll help the good guys, fine, whatever, but I'm still doing this for me. In every version since 1997, I think, when the special editions came out, they do this weird fucking thing where like, that happened. He pulls his gun out, and then Greedo says what he says, and he goes, I bet you are, or bet you will. And they add in Greedo shooting.
Yeah, okay.
And then Han's head does that freaky jerk to the left or something, and it hits the wall, and then Han shoots. And it's like a very blink and you'll miss it, but it's just freaky. Like, I remember watching it on like a DVD when I was a kid. And it's just not very smooth. And it's just, it looks like he's like a fucking Jedi or something, because his head just jerks to the left or right, and then like he dodges it and he shoots him. So people got all pissy, of course, because that's what people do.
Yeah.
And they were like, Han shot first. Why would you change that? Because the idea was like, oh, it made Han look like a bad guy. And so we wanted him to look like a better guy. And I'm like, well, that was kind of the point. But I'm on the Han shot first side. The other joke is that it's been so long that some people have never seen the original version, so they just are like, Han didn't shoot first, Greedo shoots first. I've seen that movie. And it's like, no, it's different. Like, it's a different change of scene. Obviously, Han shot first, you could watch it. But I mean, like, I like it better because it's smoother and it's not this freaky...
Yeah, and that's the video I saw where it's just like 10 minutes of him going... jerking his head.
So that's what I'm not shocked that exists, but I'm just amazed that, like... someone bothered to do it.
It's sort of like, who shot first?
But yeah, so, you know, we all go away and hunt. We run away from the stormtroopers who are chasing everybody. They get on the Millennium Falcon and it flies out, blasts its way out of Mos Eisley and flies off to head to Alderaan while also beginning to train Luke. And Obi-Wan feels as though 1,000 voices have cried out and were suddenly extinguished. Because guess what? We blew up Alderaan with the fucking Death Star because Leia wouldn't cooperate and lied. Like, I love that scene where she's talking to Tarkin. Because it's tense. Like, they really build tension with nothing but just talking.
Yeah.
It's not like in some other movies where it's like, oh, something's happening or a bomb's going to go up there. Like, literally standing there and he goes, he says, like, tell us where the Rebel base is. And she's like, I'm not going to tell you where the Rebel base is. He goes, fine. Then we'll blow up Alderaan. And she's like, whoa, what? That's my home. Don't do it. They're peaceful. They don't have weapons. It's totally fine. And he's like, well, tell us where the Rebel base is or we'll blow it up. And it's like, they're yelling at each other. It's this great, like, the gravitas that Tarkin has is just like, whoo. Peter Cushing is just like, there. And then she's like, it's on Dantooine. And he's like, cool. Anyway, blow up Alderaan. And she's like, wait a minute. Boom, done, gone. Of course, Obi-Wan feels it. No one else feels it. Whatever. And, like, you know what I have to say? Speaking of Alderaan, before we get away from it for the rest of this franchise, fuck Bail Organa for being like, you know where the one place Vader won't look for his daughter? If I make her a senator that's constantly under his nose in Coruscant. Like,
oh, Jesus.
Dude, what the hell?
Yeah.
What part of hide the child of Anakin Skywalker did you
kids,
not get?
Had your kids, had your...
Like, Obi-Wan's over here, like... Don't even call him, don't even, like, you really should let him call you mom and dad. It'll be, like, the last thing to do here. But instead, Bail Organa is over here like, hey, you want to just, like, go hang out with the Emperor for some months, weeks at a time? Like, totally cool. Why don't you just do that? Yeah, no. Oh, yeah. Don't ask him who your parents. If he says who's your parents, just say me. Just say me and your mom. Because we are. Oh, totally not anybody. It's just so fucking dumb. Really drop the ball there, Bail. Really drop the ball.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
But now we're on the Death Star, because the Millennium Falcon gets pulled in, and we gotta save the princess. I loved this part as a kid. When they dress up as stormtroopers.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I love they hide in the hole, they trick them to come on, they beat them up, they take their clothes. So that means there's two naked, dead stormtroopers on the Millennium Falcon somewhere. You know, you get the classic, like, TK-421, what's wrong with your car? He's like, I don't know, man, and... I can't see shit in this thing.
Isn't this the part where we also get the stormtrooper that hits his head?
Yes, classic. Because they get in a little command room.
Yeah.
And then Obi-Wan's like, I'll go take out the shields. Or the tractor beam, I'm sorry. I'll go take out the tractor beam. You two go find the princess. They go find the princess. And Obi-Wan fucks off. And then C-3PO and R2 are like, what do we do? And like, just wait here and hope nobody comes for the door. And then, of course, somebody comes to the door. And if you guys haven't seen it, they've actually added in like a little thonk when the dude smacks his head. It's not in the original. In the original, he hits his head and it just missed it.
Yeah.
But there's like 8 of these guys come marching in and the door doesn't quite open all the way. And one of the taller stormtroopers just, bam, bashes his head into the bottom of the door. And you can watch him like throw his head back. He's like, oh. And then when they go to leave, the head trooper looks at the one who smacked his head and goes, you wait here. And then he's like, okay. Just like, I always feel like he's punishing that
one.
Yeah. Like, you can't even work a door, you idiot. Watch the droids. And they're like,
fucking moron.
But, yes. So, they go and they find the princess and there's a shootout because they make Chewbacca look like a prisoner and you get him yelling at the little mouse droid and he's like, squeak, squeak. He's like, and he's like, fleas. I don't know, as a kid, like, this was just like the fun, because it felt like that tension, like there's a little bit of tension but still light enough to be funny where it's like, oh no, oh, hope they don't get caught, but it's also kind of funny because they're tricking everybody. Then you get the whole, you're a little short to be a stormtrooper, huh? And then I'm Luke Skywalker, I'm here to rescue you. Now what do you think of this scene with the trash compactor? Because they escape, they get a shootout, right? And she blasts the thing, they go in the trash can. What do you think of this? Because ever since I was a kid, this scene's always baffled the hell out of me.
Why?
Why is there a monster in the trash?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense either.
Is this a crocodile or an alligator flushed down the toilet situation?
I mean, it's the stuff of nightmares for sure.
Totally. I mean, you're already knee-deep in garbage, and then a monster comes and takes you. Like, fuck that. But I mean, like, yeah, this feels like, was it like a trooper on the Death Star who's like, my pet Cyclops tentacle, and it's like, oh, he's getting too big, Darth Vader's gonna find out, I'm sorry, bud, and like flushes him down the toilet. He ends up in the trash compactor, and that's just where he lives now. Does it eat the garbage?
It's just a mutated goldfish.
Oh my god, it's just nuts. What if it's Jar Jar Binks?
Oh my god.
He's mutated because of all the radiation from the Death Star. His eye stalk's like super long. And like he can look him
that
around.
That would be terrifying.
He catches you with his tongue and tries to pull you under.
Yeah. That's what I don't remember Jar Jar. Much of this scene, so I guess it wasn't super important to me.
It always bothered me as a kid because I always felt like it stopped the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, like the placement, you're right. It's just...
It's weird. It's
weird.
Because it's like, okay, we got away. And it's like, oh no, we didn't get away. But to me, it was always like really just strangely long because we're like dicking around with the stick and then we got to wait. I mean, it's tense. Like as a kid, I was always super stressed out because it's like, oh no, they're going to get squished.
Well, the wall's
like,
closing in.
I know. It's scary. But it's like at the same time when I watch it as a kid, I'd be like, oh, the trash compactor. Like I never liked the trash compactor part. I'll say that honestly. There's nothing wrong with it, I guess. But it was just strange that like we stopped the movie. And it gets weird because, like, the monster grabs Luke, pulls him under, and then he, like, comes up, and they're like, what happened? He's like, I don't know, it just let me go. And I'm like, really? Like, it just fucked off? Like, is it going to get squished? If it's not getting squished, where'd it go? Why can't you go where it goes? Like, what's going on? A lot of questions in that one scene. Feels like it got stuck in at a later date. But they get out, and it's kind of the home run here, right? Where they got to get to the Millennium Falcon and fuck off the Death Star. And Obi-Wan's noble sacrifice. What did you think of this? I remember as a kid hating this lightsaber fight. Even when it was just these three movies, I hated this lightsaber fight. Because Vader is like, has been hunting Obi-Wan on the Death Star. Like, he senses him. He's like, something's up. My old homeboy's back. I gotta fuck his day up. And he's hunting him, and they finally find each other in the hallway.
Yeah, I thought that there could have been a little bit more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like with the way Obi-Wan was acting towards Anakin was very stale or very static, I guess. Like, there wasn't... I don't know. I guess because I've seen the prequels again...
That's a good point.
And seeing their relationship as, like, you know, brother to brother,
mm-hmm.
there was none of that, like, in this scene. It was just very much, like... Almost like when Luke Skywalker fights Kylo Ren.
Well, I'm sure that's what they're trying to emulate in that. But I think when he fights Kylo Ren, there's that degree of cockiness to him that I think is what they were going for here. Like, gotcha. I will say, if you want to compare those two fights, I would say that the... Shoot me, I guess. Come after me, whatever. But I think the sequence in The Last Jedi... hits the emotional notes that you want more.
Yeah, like this didn't hit any emotional notes.
Right.
I'm kind of just like, no, you have a lot of history with this guy. It isn't just some another, you know, bad guy that you gotta get mm-hmm. rid of. Like, this is, you know, this somebody you used to care about.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, even from Vader, and I mean, I guess this is kind of difficult. Because, of course, like Amber said, like, we watched the prequels, we watched the sequels. Like, we have this huge franchise behind it now. So watching this movie... in 2022, when it came out in 1977, and it was the only thing, like, there was nothing else that was Star Wars besides this, it's obviously hard to judge, but, yeah, I feel like there's not a lot coming from Vader either, and I get that it's, like, more difficult because he's behind a mask, so, like, all of that emotion is coming out in James Earl Jones' vocal work,
mm-hmm.
but, like, I don't get quite the arrogance. Like, he says arrogant things, you know, when I left you, I was a student, now I'm the master, whatever. And it's just kind of like, that's fine. But, like, I don't feel that dynamic between the two characters that you get. Like, hate him all you want. I kind of dug the... I liked the chemistry between Obi-Wan and Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
It was what it needed to be. That, and I think we said it when we covered those movies. That, like, older... Lilo and Stitch. It's the older sibling who got stuck being a parent. And they are annoyed as shit with their younger sibling.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, like, and I don't get that here, and I think it's kind of a shame that, like, there wasn't that much foresight at the time, which is fair.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's going to survive. This movie was done cheaply and all that stuff. But I mean, it would have been cool to see, like, everyone equates this, like, this is the end of their fight, right? You're seeing the end of a fight, not a whole fight. And I'm like, I guess I get it, but I mean, like, it's one and done. It's pop, pop, then a swing.
Yeah. Like, it's poof. Very, like, compared to other fights, again, like, Obi-Wan versus Anakin, that fight is, I mean, it's 10 fucking minutes long.
Fuck, is it only 10?
Well, like it's 20. Something, it's really, yeah, it's a very long fight. And even Darth Maul, that fight was pretty long, too.
Yeah, it's true.
But this one was just like, yeah, like you said, it's just like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Like, you're done.
Absolutely.
And to not have anything like, you know, I failed you as like a teacher. Mm-hmm. I failed you as like a friend. Because let's be honest, like, because I don't know why, but I just don't like Obi-Wan's character in this.
No, you don't like Sir Alec Guinness's portrayal of Obi-Wan Kenobi?
I think it's good, but because of the foresight that we have, which curse, I know, we are cursed because of that.
And all that shit,
yeah. We're so cursed because of it. We, like, to not see that dynamic, like, in this movie, it just, like, it hurts. Because I do, like, I feel like, again, like, there is a lot of issues with the ways of the Jedi.
Right, right.
And it's been told time and time again. I mean, we're now getting to the last trilogy, and they're still, like, you know, contemplating whether or not, like, there should be any Jedis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just like they're like, no, there can't be any Sith. And it's like, well, you can't have like, you know, one or the other.
Right.
Because there has to be balance. And I feel like, I don't know, I guess in previous movies, I feel like Obi-Wan did kind of let down Anakin. Because Anakin had nobody else, especially when his mom died. And I guess he had Padme, but she doesn't quite understand because she's not like a Force-sensitive person. So the only person he could rely on was Obi-Wan. I felt like he let him down.
Yeah, that's why he turned to Palpatine.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it was somebody that he could rely on, even though, you know, Palpatine is just basically using him.
Right. I mean, it's that Anakin's dad died before he got the chance to be his dad, Qui-Gon, you know? And then Obi-Wan was supposed to step in as a father figure, but clearly didn't want to.
Yeah.
Like, he only did it because Qui-Gon asked him to do it.
And he was so dedicated to, like, the Jedi Council.
And, like, the way they do things.
Yeah.
Like, whereas Qui-Gon was more fluid, Obi-Wan was more like, by the book. We're doing it by the book. You're not allowed to have attachments. You're not attached to me. I'm not your dad. I am your master. And you will obey me as such. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's their dynamic. And I feel like if there's one thing I would have changed in that lightsaber duel between the two of them in episode 4 is I would have had it. I wouldn't have done the whole, like, because what was Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan? He, like, holds up his saber and just kind of closes his eyes. And Vader just cuts him. And he poofed, he's dead. I kind of wish it did the same, like, kind of cocky smile that Obi-Wan gets. And, like, make Obi-Wan do a dumb move. Like, not, like, just stand there and take it, but maybe make him, like, charge Vader or something and, like, leave himself wide open. And then Vader swings and poof, Obi-Wan's gone. And, you know, Vader, like, throws his cloak on the ground or something because it gets on him. And he's just like, what the hell? And then Luke yells no, starts shooting. They all escape. Because, like, in this, it's just like, ever since I was a kid, I was like, Vader's not dumb.
Yeah.
Like, Obi-Wan just holds up his lightsaber and Vader's just like, finally my shot. Like, dude, what? Like, come on. Something's up, dude. Yeah. He knows something's up when he's, like, stomping on his clothes. And he's like, something's fishy here. Like, I don't like this.
I can feel it.
Another thing I don't quite like is that we immediately cut to Yavin 4 on the Rebel base, and they're like, all right, let's go blow up the Death Star. And we get very little time before A and B here. I think it's really cool that they filmed at, like, I don't remember what the, I think it's like Tikal in Mexico. They actually filmed it in, like, Mayan ruins, which is pretty dope. So, like, that's why they look like Mayan ruins is because they are. So I just thought that was super cool. And it really gave it, like, that extra kind of realism to it. Like, they're hiding in, I think, canonically, they're, like, ancient Sith temples.
Oh, okay.
But in, you know, the railroad, it's like, yeah, we're filming in, like, this. It's like, the only place we could hide is this, like, ancient temple hidden in a jungle because nobody's around. You get Han Solo saying, all right, well, you know, fuck all y'all, I'm leaving. I got paid, I'm done, bye. And Luke gives him some shit about it. And He goes flying off with everybody. He takes up the mantle of Red 5, who we learned in Rogue One gets shot down, I guess, specifically, so that can be a thing. But yeah, so, Amber, what do you think of the Death Star run? I mean, you know, overall, it's hard to talk about, obviously, in depth. I mean, it has its own chunks within it. The bombing, that doesn't work, and then Luke does it. Darth Vader comes, and then Han comes to save the day, and Luke blows up the ship, or blows up the Death Star. What do you think of that whole sequence? I mean, I just summarized in a few words, but there's obviously, it's a lot more than that.
I thought this scene was probably the best thing out of, like, the entire movie,
mm-hmm.
because it not only showcases, like, Luke's abilities as, like, a pilot,
mm-hmm.
which, again, very akin to his father, Anakin.
Right.
Because he did, like, the same thing. But yeah, I think, like, just kind of seeing this whole battle going on, especially given that this film was made, like, really long time ago.
1977.
Yeah, 1977. And just seeing...
Oh, yeah, if you see some behind-the-scenes stuff, this is, it's all models.
Yeah.
It's fucking... Yeah, that's for the exactly most part, what I was just models. About to yeah, say. Yeah, it's amazing, like, what they built.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think just... you know, showcasing, like, also Darth Vader, because he's also in this fight, too. Yep. He has, like...
He's like a bitchin' pilot.
Has his own squad of TIE fighters, and he's just coming at, you know, the rebels.
Yeah.
And
he's fucking him up. He kills Luke's friend Wedge.
Yeah, that's true.
I like that there is loss in this movie. Other movies don't do this.
You're right. Nobody fucking dies in Very the later Very few people movies.
Die, in, especially the sequels. I mean, does anyone die in the prequel movies? I mean, Qui-Gon dies.
But no, like, there's a lot of, like, no-name people that died too, I think.
And I guess, like, when you add in the Clone Wars series, like, when the clone troopers die, it feels a little bit more weight because they're dying. But yeah, in the sequel movies, how many people fucking dying that we give a
all
shit
the
about?
Jedi's die.
Yeah, all the Jedi. Oh, you're right. I mean, all the Jedi's fucking die. Like, we have to
we
watch
literally
that
watch a whole scene of just
of
Jedi's
just killing
dying.
Jedi.
But yeah, in the newer series, does anybody die? Like, no. There's no stake.
There's very. I mean, people die. Okay, like, we watched episode 8 the other night. Obviously, we'll get to it. And, like, a lot of people die in the course of that movie because they're all on the ships.
Yeah.
But they're just numbers or holograms at most, right? They're like, what do we do, Laura Dern? And then they're just like, blow up. And it's like, we don't even see their fucking face. Whereas in this, right before they leave, you get this whole bit where Luke and Wedge are reunited. They're buddies from Tatooine. Wedge went to join the Imperials, ended up joining the Rebellion. He's been fighting. He vouches for him. And they're like, well, let's talk about all. I want to hear all your stories when we get back. And then Vader comes in and blows his ass away right next to Luke Skywalker. And it's like the musical cue where Luke... I think at that point, that's where this all becomes very real for him, right? Like, mm-hmm. Obi-Wan dying, he's sad. But this is where, like, that reality of, like, a battle that he's always wanted to be a part of, that adventure and shit.
Yeah.
I think with Wedge dying, that's really where it's like, whoa, this is real. Because Wedge doesn't come back. There's no one storing his fucking memory. It's not a cop-out and there was another shuttle. He's just fucking dead. And, oh yeah, later we find out your dad fucking killed him. So isn't that a real big twist? Like, shit. But yeah, that Darth Vader, like you were saying, Amber, is I think it showcases his ability as a pilot and as a leader. And I think it's cool to see that juxtaposed with, like, Luke also not being too shabby, you know?
Pretty, 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 pretty,
why?
Pretty good.
What do you think of the Deus Ex Hanukkah?
Boo!
What?
Where Han Solo comes in right when he's about to kill
Luke. Oh, yeah,
Luke.
You're right. That was a total...
What do you think of... Like, what do you... I don't know. It's just like, I kind of like it how it's like, yahoo! Like, woohoo! Or whatever. And you get the sun behind the Millennium Falcon, and it's coming in, and, like, I just love Vader's like, what? Like,
I don't know how that thing holds up so well.
Dude.
Yeah.
It's like, from the time of Solo
like,
to this movie...
Like, it can do anything... Like, even better than most ships.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how?
I don't
how does
get
it do that?
But you know,
it's
I think
an
it's
an old
the,
piece of garbage.
it's the love of it, though, you know? You just gotta love the Millennium Falcon. It's the fastest ship in the galaxy, and it owns
at
it.
At 6 parsecs.
12!
12. Oopsies.
Don't embellish the numbers. But yeah, no, it's they shoot. I like how they had the foresight, though, to where Vader doesn't die. They just blast him away and he kind of spins out. I think he flies away ultimately. And then they blow up the Death Star. And I love it that that countdown. I mean, it's a very classic movie tropiness, right? Where it's just like 3, 2, 1. And then it just, boom, the ship explodes, or the station explodes. And everyone's like, hooray, we blew up the Death Star. And then you get the award medal ceremony at the end. Chewbacca doesn't get one.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, whatever. People used to get mad at it. Now everybody gets mad that he did get a medal. I don't know. Pick one. Get mad at something, yeah, I guess.
And then the start of a bizarre love triangle.
Yeah. That's weird. They're all getting... Luke. Which, thank God, that gets nipped in the bud next movie.
I know.
I don't need that. But, yeah. So I think that covers like everything that happens in episode 4.
Yeah, it's actually a very simple...
It is a very straightforward film. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons people liked it so much, is it's not overly complicated. I think it's one of the reasons why people hated the prequel so much, too, now I'm looking at it in hindsight, is because like Star Wars, A New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi are all relatively straightforward films. Like... They do the thing, they split up into their subplots when needed, and then they come back at the end and solve the whole thing. In this movie, I mean, you don't really even have a B plot. You kind of have like a sub one. Like, what are the bad guys doing? They're fucking about talking about things. What are the good guys doing? They're heading towards the bad guys. Like, that's what we're doing. There's not that much disparity. It's a single line. And I think, so previous episode, we revisited Solo on our first remix episode. And I said something during that where I said, one of the things that makes this movie, Solo, very boring is that there's not... It doesn't get broken up. It's just a straight, what are the characters doing? They're all on the ship. They're all going to get the spice stuff. They're a spice planet. The Kessel, they're doing the Kessel run together. They're going to refine the coaxium together. They're in the heist thing that they're doing. There's never a point where we stop and see what someone else is doing, and it's fucking annoying.
Yeah.
The only time it ever happens is when we see whatever her name is in Warwick Davis, Infus Nest and Warwick Davis's character, like talking about putting a tracker on the Falcon, and then we're back on the Falcon. This movie. For those that are listening, you probably are thinking, well, Thomas, you just said that's what you liked about A New Hope. And it's like, no, it is like what I like about New Hope. But like at the same time, A New Hope says, hey, what are the bad guys doing? And we stop and we go to the Death Star and we see the Empire talking. We see them torturing people.
Yeah.
Well, off screen, but it's implied. And then we see them blow up. We see them do the bad guy things. In Solo, we never see the bad guys do anything. Unless they're with our characters, we never see them do a damn thing.
You're right, and I think that takes away from the plot.
Absolutely, it never stops.
Because you want to know what they're up to.
Well, it never gives me anything to think that they're bad.
And I think it's that whole thing where the audience knows more than the characters do, and
I think it's one step worse than that because we only know more. Because we've seen the other movies that come in the future from that film, right? Like, we know the Empire's bad because we see what they do later. But if I haven't seen those movies and I haven't seen the previous movies, then in Solo, I'm just like, I guess they got a big scary ship, so that's bad. They told me they're bad, so okay. The most you get is Paul Bettany slicing someone's throat. And it's implied he's evil. He's done a lot of other bad shit. Even the fucking spice mining people, they're just like, they got slaves. That's bad. I'm like, yeah, that's bad. I guess they do bad things because they got slaves. Like, I'm not going to argue they're bad guys, but that's it. That's all you're showing me. Whereas I think, this movie shows you the bad guys doing bad things, shows you the good guys doing good things, and it doesn't overinflate itself. However, for pretext, I think that is why Empire is the superior film, but we can talk about that, of course, next time.
Ooh.
I know. because it manages to balance all of it really well while still maintaining a B-plot. But Amber, if you don't have any other last-minute thoughts for A New Hope, and of course if you do, feel free to shout, what are you rating this movie? And obviously, would you suggest people watch it?
So I would rate this movie like...
out of context from the other ones. You don't have to worry about the other ratings so much. We'll do all that at the end, of course. But yeah, on its own, you're watching Star Wars 77.
I gotta give it like a 7 out of 10, which is probably lower than what
I think most people might give it. Yeah, who disagree with you? What makes it a 7?
I think it because it's just so bland to me, but it's like important because it's the opening to the entire franchise, so I can't downplay that. But
I mean, like this is kind of your opinion, though. I mean, like you can say it's good
compared to other movies that come later. I feel like there's not really a whole lot going on, especially on the. I guess there's more action than there is when it comes to. Like developing the plot and the characters, like we kind of lack that a little bit. Okay. We get like, you know, first insight into, you know, who Han Solo is or Luke Skywalker and Leia. But I think it's the real, like, I think the better plots like come later, like, you know, throughout the entire franchise.
Okay.
When we actually, you know, when we figure out, like, hey, this is where, like, Luke and, you know, Leia come from.
Right, this
is, like, their heritage. Mm-hmm. This is their story.
So do you think, then are you saying that, like, the later films almost retroactively, like, make this one worse, in your opinion? Or
I think so, because, like, there's a lot of things going on that they kind of just leave out in this first one. For obvious reasons, because they didn't have the foresight.
Was like, oh, we're only going to make one movie.
Darth Vader used to be a Jedi, like, you know, and then Palpatine used to be a fucking senator.
He used to be the Chancellor of the Galaxy. Yeah. There's obviously, like, there's some tooling that happened over the course of the 30 years or whatever between, I guess 20 years between this film and episode one. But, yeah, okay. I mean, I guess like, I see your point. Like, watching them all in context, it does make it a little... Well, it's like all the stuff I was ranting about Uncle Owen, right? It's like, oh, well, am I supposed to seriously believe he's not technically Anakin's brother? He's like his stepbrother. Yeah. And it's like, they didn't have any connection. They met once.
Yeah.
And yet we're acting like he knows Anakin to his core. And it's like, he barely knew his fucking mom.
Yeah.
Like, how does he know anything about Anakin besides this, like, couple days he spent with him in which Anakin killed an entire tribe of Dusken Raiders and then they buried his Owen's stepmother. Mm. Like... That's not really enough to base the entirety of a person on. It's a little fucked up. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to hang out with that person anymore. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to buy like this whole thing where he's like, he's got too much of his father. And he's like, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm like, what, you think he's going to go murder people now? Is that what you're implying? Like, I guess so, because his father's a bad guy. I think that line is interesting, though, because when you're watching Star Wars and you haven't, like, if you're in 1977, you're watching it. And, like, he says, that's what I'm afraid of. You don't know.
Yeah.
You won't know for another few years.
Yeah.
Till, like, 1981, when the sequel comes out. So you're just like, I wonder what that means.
I think a lot of movies today, they try and give you a lot of information because that contributes to, like, the world building.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, if you just look at this movie alone, there's none of that. All you know is, like, there's this planet called Tatooine. There's Alderaan. Which you never get introduced to because it blows up.
Yeah, you just see it on a screen and then it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Poof. And then the rest of it is like pretty much in space, like on a, you know.
Well, it's Star Wars after all.
So. Yeah, on a Death Star. Like that's basically it.
But see, I think it does exactly the right amount of world building in that regard, you know?
Yeah, I guess it gives you like a little tease into like, okay, this is what the world could be.
Yeah. It tells you what you need, I think, is what we're all
in the moment landing on. Like, yeah. If we're going by the audience doesn't know more than Luke, then it works perfectly because you're learning along with him. Like learning, okay, Darth Vader is my dad. Holy crap, he's evil. And then it's like, oh, wait, but like maybe he's actually good. There's some good in him.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, this is like the ways of the Force. So I guess, yeah.
But I think even on a smaller level, right, like in this film alone, like, just A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, I give this movie, like, a 9 out of 10. I think the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, I really like this movie. It does.
Fine, I'll bump it up to an 8.
You don't have to change your score. It's okay.
No, I feel like I should give it a higher.
You don't have to feel. Don't feel it, guys. It's okay to not like or like a movie. It's all right. I'm saying I like it as we're talking about it, because to me it does, in the context of just it alone, you know, none of the other films, I give it like a 9 out of 10. There are parts, like I've said, or I complained about it, or it's just like not super gripping. Like the Obi-Wan Darth Vader fight, like these two guys with laser swords, you think it's going to be like a cooler fight, and it just kind of isn't.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I know everybody's like, oh, well, it's because that's not how like samurai fight in samurai movies. I'm like, I don't know, man. If I watch like Seven Samurai and I see some of those fights, those are a lot more gripping than their fight, because their fight is it's long. It's not a quick duck, duck, dun, you know, it keeps going. And they talk a lot, and it's not very, to me, it's not very heated, I guess, is the whole thing. Maybe I'm just, you know, overdosed on action in 2022. But I feel like this movie builds the world out just enough to where you're not overburdened with it. Like, Amber, you were saying, nowadays everybody's got to be like, oh, well, what's going on planet Gleep Gloop is happening over here, and if we don't go there, then all this shit, it's so fucking convoluted. I mean, like, look at Last Jedi is a great example. It's like, all right, let's fuck off to Canto Bight, and we're going to, like, do this whole thing where we talk about society on this planet, and, like, obviously,
oh, God.
We'll talk plenty about it in the future, but it derails a lot of it, because all we're doing is explaining this dynamic of the world that you're already in, and it doesn't really contribute to the plot that you're watching, right? Whereas in this movie, we do get some people talking, like Tarkin, when he establishes the Senate is gone, Emperor controls everything now. That is just enough world building. We'll see. I know how big a galaxy is. Galaxy's really big. Everyone watch this movie, you know, galaxy's really fucking big. You got this dude who basically just said, the people have no voice anymore. The Emperor controls everything. I mean, if you live in the United States, it makes fucking sense, right?
Yeah.
He says, imagine the United States where only the governors of the state run the country, and they have the president at the top who just demands whatever they do. That's the world you're living in. And like, as an American, that makes sense to me. Even as a non-American, it kind of makes sense in that you have a Senate. There's no more Senate. There's just the people that live there. They kind of lord of their fiefdom now. Great. Awesome. They're super powerful. And then you also have, we have a giant gun that could blow up a planet. Let's blow up those pacifists. Now we've established how evil these guys are. Leia's like, oh, they're just going to blow up a planet, even though I gave them what they wanted, and even though there are no weapons on that planet. These people are not a threat. I'm going to blow it up to make a point. You know? All because, as Target says, like, Dantooine's too far away. No one will care. So if I do it here, people will care.
Fucking Darbon.
We are establishing how evil these people are in, like, what, 3 lines? It's like 3 minutes of dialogue?
Yeah.
You know? Or not 3 minutes of dialogue, but you know what I mean. Like a handful, like a minute of dialogue, boom, we've established how evil these people are. Luke is this pure, naive child. What happened to my dad? What? You were in the Clone Wars? That's so cool. It's like, it's a war. War is not cool. Why are you so hyped about this? What's a Jedi? What are these? He's naive. He's asking those questions. Han Solo shoots Greedo first. Just saying, he shoots Greedo. Like, even if he didn't, we established that he is not a good guy. He's in with some bad people. He's trying to get out, but he's not going to stay out, you know? He's in it for the money. We establish everything really cleanly, I think, in this film. And even other Star Wars films, it's like really fucking convoluted. I mean, prequels are not without their issues in that regard. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, Episode 1 is so fucking convoluted. It's like, why is anyone doing anything? Like, who gives a shit? What? But yes, so I give this movie a 9. Amber, you could keep it as a 7 if you want. It's okay.
Okay.
It's all right. But if you rate Empire that low, which we will be talking about, of course, next week on our cinematic Star Wars marathon, we will be continuing, of course, with none other than Episode 5, Empire, The Empire Strikes Back, which I think will have some different takes. This one is always touted as like the best Star Wars movie. So we'll see if that still holds up for us. But until next week, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this is So What Happens Next Small Screens. We'll see you guys next week. And as always, may the Force